He's legitimized North Korea. He's talked about his good buddy, who's a thug, and he talks about how we're better off.
The impact of foreign policy on the U.S. election. It's Tuesday, October 27th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us as well online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Cambodia's push to clear landmines, lower altitudes for airlines, social media's role in elections, a new life amid COVID, a virtual film festival. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Foreign policy issues have not been a major focus of the U.S. presidential campaign, which has largely centered on the coronavirus pandemic and resulting economic recession. However, as VOA's Brian Patton reports, President Donald Trump's hardline stances against China and Cuba could help him in key swing states that he needs to win in the November 3rd election.
During the final presidential debate on Thursday, national security threats were only briefly addressed. When asked about North Korea's continued development of nuclear weapons, President Donald Trump defended his diplomatic outreach to leader Kim Jong-un.
You know what, North Korea? We're not in a war. We have a good relationship. You know, people don't understand. Having a good relationship with leaders of other countries is a good thing.
Democratic candidate Joe Biden criticized Trump's unilateral foreign policy approach that he said has failed to restrain America's adversaries.
He's legitimized North Korea. He's talked about his good buddy, who's a thug, and he talks about how we're better off. And they have much more capable missiles, able to reach U.S. territory much more easily than ever did before.
The Trump administration has cited restarting North Korean nuclear talks among its foreign policy accomplishments, along with brokering improved relations between Israel and some of its neighbors, negotiating a peace deal with the Taliban in Afghanistan, defeating ISIS in Syria, all while withdrawing American forces from foreign conflicts and persuading allies to pay a greater share of the costs for stationing U.S. troops abroad. While Biden faults Trump for allowing Iran, Russia, and China to expand their power and influence as the U.S. pulls back from its global leadership role. And in particular, he denounced Trump for refusing to confront Russian leader Vladimir Putin over reports that Russia paid bounties to the Taliban for killing U.S. soldiers. Except in times of war, foreign policy does not usually play a major role in U.S. elections. But this year, Trump's tough trade restrictions imposed on communist Cuba and efforts to depose Venezuela's socialist leader Nicolas Maduro could increase his support among Cuban Americans in Florida.
The Trump position, that anti-Castro position and pro-democracy position in Venezuela are helping Trump with a small segment of the electorate.
It is unclear if Trump's strong support for Israel can cut into Biden's support from Jewish Americans in Florida, who voted overwhelmingly for Trump's Democratic opponent Hillary Clinton in 2016. The president's tariffs on China for unfair trade could also shore up his support among working-class voters in industrial states like Michigan and Pennsylvania. Trump won these key swing states in 2016, and this year they could again determine the winner of a close contest. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Typhoon displaces thousands, floods villages in Philippines. Malaysia's king rejects prime minister's request to declare state of emergency. U.S. airstrike kills five Taliban fighters in Afghanistan. Australian anguish at passenger strip searches in Qatar. Taiwan says Chinese warplanes are crossing a median line. But is there a median line? You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more as you visit Facebook online at VOA Asia and also stop by the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Cambodia is deploying 2,000 soldiers to train as D-miners after Western nations led by the United States have bolstered their efforts to rid the country of landmines and other unexploded ordnance by 2025. We hear more from Luke Hunt.
A 30-year civil war left Cambodia among the most heavily mined nations on Earth. And children, curious or just scavenging for scrap metal, are often among the victims. The United Nations Development Programme says casualties from landmines and other unexploded ordnance have fallen dramatically, from 4,320 people killed or wounded in 1996 to just 77 in 2019. Explosives claimed 55 victims in the first 9 months of this year. It is a problem that afflicts the entire country and further impacts an economy already punished by the withdrawal of trade preferences by the European Union and the COVID-19 pandemic. The government wants the land cleared and made productive for agriculture. Just under half of all contaminated land has been cleared, and the UNDP says about 2,000 square kilometres still needs to be rehabilitated. The US ambassador to Cambodia, Patrick Murphy, recently hosted a Buddhist ceremony to commemorate efforts to rid the countryside of the explosives. He says the US has spent about $160 million clearing contaminated land over the last 20 years.
Whether we're working in agriculture, public health, education, the environment, law enforcement, food security, and demining, we have excellent partners here, and we're making a lot of progress in helping Cambodia become more prosperous and stable and hopefully more democratic as well.
Tong Tri, a demining advisor with the UNDP, said an extra 2,000 deminers would enable the clearance of an extra 85 square kilometres a year.
And if we have the 2,000 deminers from the Royal Cambodian Army to support the humanitarian deminers, we will ask them to clear mostly the landmine along the Cambodian-Thai border.
We took First Vice President of the Cambodian Mine Action and Victim Assistance Authority is seeking a total of $377 million from friendly countries and development partners.
5.7 million people have access to safe land thanks to the mine clearing operation in this country. And the United States by far is one of the largest donors to mine action sector in this country over the past two decades.
Another $20 million has been allocated to the Cambodian Mine Action and Victims Assistance Authority for the next 5 years by Australia, with Canada, New Zealand and South Korea, among others, donating millions of dollars more. Luke Hunt for VOA News, Phnom Penh, Cambodia.
Happening now in Asia, Thailand's biggest opposition party called for Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha to resign as Parliament opened a special session called by him to discuss months of protests. The Prime Minister has rejected pro-democracy calls to step down. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Analysts are saying a reported spike in U.S. military flights over the seas near China reflects Washington's drive to understand and deter Chinese expansion in contested waters. U.S. military surveillance planes flew off China's coast 60 times in September. That's more than in July or August, according to Chinese state-backed research organization South China Sea Strategic Situation Probing Initiative. When contacted by VOA, U.S. Army Major Randy Reedy, a spokesman for the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, would say only that flight frequency near China has been consistent over time. And U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said in July Washington would help other states resist Chinese expansion. U.S. air activity would back up Pompeo's directive, says Sean King, vice president of the Park Strategies Political Consultancy in New York.
Any uptick in flights this year can be considered commensurate with the U.S. State Department's July policy statement that specific PRC South China Sea claims are unlawful.
Stephen Nagy, Senior Associate Professor of Politics and International Studies at International Christian University in Tokyo, says China is paying attention to U.S. missions because it wants the United States to think it could not win an air war with China.
I think that China has tried to create the narrative that they can make any conflict with China extremely expensive for the United States.
Nagy adds the United States has an advantage in combat and deployment experience, plus backup if needed, from allies including Japan, South Korea, and Australia. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for sharing this story. Meanwhile, in the United States, losses continue to mount for the U.S. airline industry as the coronavirus pandemic continues to wreak havoc on the economy and hope for an immediate government aid package dims. We hear more from correspondent Mariama Diallo.
It's been a bumpy ride for the airline industry since the coronavirus pandemic hit the world. The industry's downturn dwarfs previous crises, says Carl Moore of McGill University.
We're looking at flights being down in the area of 90% less in March and April than they were the year before. So it's a time of enormous crisis, and there are hundreds of thousands of people who work in the airline industry. And when you think of the allied industries of travel, of hotels, it's millions of Americans in these industries.
Nearly 5 million air transport jobs globally are at risk, according to estimates by the Air Transport Action Group. Earlier this year, U.S. airline companies received billions in the form of cash and loans that helped keep them afloat. The hope was that the virus would have subsided by now. It hasn't.
And what we've seen is domestic travel in the U.S. has gone up some, but international travel is down horrifically, and even domestic travel is not anywhere near what it was last year. So we have the ongoing crisis. We have maybe a second wave, certainly a lot more people getting sick than we had hoped at this time of year. So it's a thing where the industry's troubles have gone beyond 6 to 7 months and will go on for some months and perhaps a couple of years to come.
Negotiations between Congress and the White House on the new aid package continue, with few signs that an agreement will be reached soon. This has led airlines to cut jobs, offer early retirement, and take other cost-cutting measures. But some experts note that with airlines raking in profits over the last decade, they could have made better decisions, even though they could not foresee the pandemic.
In the last few years prior to COVID, this industry paid huge amount, really huge amount of dividends to the shareholders, as well as stock repurchase. Basically, they left with very little cash.
Israel Shaked, in a recent article, argues that decisions made last year by the airlines were short-sighted.
This industry, they paid out dividends of $1.7 billion and a stock repurchase of $7.4 billion, $7, $8, $9 billion in 1 year out of the company.
But for now, combined third-quarter losses for American, United, Delta, Southwest, and Alaska Air have exceeded $11.5 billion. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. China says it will impose sanctions on U.S. entities participating in U.S. arms sales to Taiwan. Boeing Defense, Lockheed Martin, and Raytheon will be sanctioned, said a Chinese foreign ministry spokesman. Boeing says it remains committed to China's aviation community. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, Facebook, Twitter, and other internet companies are rolling out new policies on controversial content during the U.S. presidential campaign. Michelle Quinn logs in.
Donald Trump, the president of the United States, is famously active on Twitter. But in recent weeks, Twitter has placed warnings on some of Trump's tweets, such as about the coronavirus and voting by mail. At Team Trump, the Trump campaign's Twitter account also was temporarily blocked from tweeting an article about the son of his Democratic opponent, Joe Biden. Some welcomed Twitter's actions, for reducing the spread of misinformation. Others have criticized the decisions as biased, curtailing conservative speech in a way that could affect the outcome of the U.S. election. It's not just Twitter. Facebook has also limited the ability of Trump to share the story about Biden's son. Other sites have taken similar strong action. YouTube, owned by Google, said it was banning content associated with QAnon, which the company calls conspiracy theory content used to justify real-world violence. Why are the companies acting now?
The thing about the upcoming election, as a colleague put it, it's kind of like the disinformation Super Bowl. It's all eyes are on. We're looking for it to happen. We're anticipating that it's going to happen, and it's this big event.
Not too long ago, the internet companies let their users do the talking without much interference. After the 2016 U.S. election, they were criticized for not doing enough to stop misinformation on their services, including letting foreign-sponsored networks run online influence campaigns. Over the past year and increasingly in recent weeks, Twitter, Facebook, Google, and others have tightened rules and enforced their policies.
I think that they need to accept that they have to be the ones to deal with these issues and not be able to be the enablers as they were previously.
Some Republicans say that the new rules are unfairly enforced, squelching conservative voices. Republican senators have called for the CEOs of Twitter and Facebook to testify about their policies. Lawmakers from both parties are considering changing the laws that currently say that companies are not responsible for the speech other people publish on their sites. Take that protection away and the companies will be destroyed, said Ken Paulson, director of the Free Speech Center at Middle Tennessee University.
Unless you really want to kill Facebook and Twitter, there's no middle ground here. Either have a very small service or you're going to have to run the risk of having content that is disturbing, confusing, and that misinforms people. There's really just two choices, and Congress can't do much about it except try to destroy Twitter and Facebook.
As Election Day approaches, the stakes are high for the internet firms and for the U.S. public. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Now on VOA Asia, New York City is seeing a rise in COVID-19 cases as the number of deaths in the city has passed 24,000. City leaders are shutting down some parts of New York to contain the virus, while businesses continue to struggle to stay afloat. Meanwhile, one group is helping recent U.S. immigrants as they adapt to a new country and deal with the pandemic. Keith Kaczynski tells us more.
32-year-old Ali Alberkawi is living in the Queensboro of New York City, a world away from his native Morocco. He moved here in 2018 to be with his American wife. Now he's adjusting to a new world without his family and friends back home.
It was really hard at first. Tried to apply for different jobs, like anything, like, you know, Starbucks, McDonald's, anything that can start with, you know. But no one gave back to me.
After being unemployed for months, Ali says he started to lose faith. But that changed after he received help from Common Point Queens, a nonprofit organization that provides job support. The group helped Ali develop a resume, prepare for an interview, and even hired him for various jobs. Then in March, the coronavirus pandemic hit.
So the pandemic kind of got it worse a little bit. Before, I had all these different jobs, like working in all these departments with Common Point Queen. But after the pandemic, like everything shuts down, it really affected me, like financially.
But soon after, Common Point hired him to work at a daycare for the children of frontline workers fighting the pandemic. However, with the unemployment rate in New York soaring over 20% during the worst of the pandemic, many others weren't as lucky. Officials say immigrants are being especially hit hard, particularly in Queens, which has one of the highest rates of undocumented residents in the nation. Many are paid in cash and receive no unemployment benefits.
The phone does not stop ringing. Unfortunately, the demand for food is increasing.
CEO Danielle Ellman says the nonprofit provided food to nearly 9,000 people by August. That's about 8,000 more than expected.
That tells you what is going on in the borough of Queens right now, and the ways and the resources that we need to provide people immediately while we work on these long-term solutions, because we have to believe that New York is going to get back on its feet.
Earlier this month, Common Point Queens combined with the United Jewish Appeal Federation of New York to open The Hub. The nearly 10,000 square foot facility provides food, job placement assistance, and vocational training.
We're trying not to give a client just a job. We're trying to help them literally start a pathway towards success.
The Hub is expected to serve 6,000 clients in the first year and open 6 other locations to help those like Ali build a more stable future.
I need to make a plan. I need to make something that's permanent, that's not like just temporary, you know, like something that's going to be better for me, and also I will not be affected when something like this pandemic happens in the future.
Ali is to begin studying computer information systems in the near future. Keith Kosinski for VOA News, Queens, New York.
AFI Fest, one of Hollywood's most prestigious film festivals and part of the American Film Institute, was held virtually this year because of the coronavirus pandemic. VOA's Penelope Palou spoke to the festival's organizers and filmmakers about the challenges and advantages of the online platform.
124 films from 35 countries were represented in this year's AFI Festival.
We've been interested in diversity. That's important to us. It's important to the programming team.
Just over half were directed by women, such as Nora Martirosyan, a Franco-Armenian director. Her film, Should the Wind Drop, is about an abandoned airport in the disputed separatist enclave of Nagorno-Karabakh.
This airport indeed exists, and there are people who go there to work every day. But there are no planes that arrive or leave this airport for many years. In fact, the airport, it is the symbol of this desire of the recognition.
The documentary 76 Days chronicles the 76 days of the pandemic lockdown in the Chinese province of Wuhan. Shot by a team of Chinese filmmakers in Wuhan and produced by filmmaker Hao Wu in New York City, the film chronicles the desperate efforts of medical workers to save patients at a Wuhan hospital.
In the beginning of this pandemic, a lot of their efforts were futile because they couldn't save them. They didn't know enough about this virus to truly save people. So this kind of emotional anguish, I feel like it must be universal.
There were some advantages of the virtual film festival this year.
Incredibly increased accessibility, where we're able to present films and make them available to anybody in the U.S.
Thinking about economical reasons and environmental reasons, it makes sense. It makes sense to be able to do this and not to have to spend money and taking a plane to travel to another city, blah, blah, blah. But of course, nothing compares with the possibility to be there, sharing with the audience and watching the film in the big screen and everything, no?
In Tragic Jungle, filmmaker Yulene Olaizola presents the Mayan jungle in the border between Mexico and Belize as a living entity that has magical powers on human beings. Something, she says, that could be felt much more intimately inside a dark movie theater and on the large screen. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
That's our program for today. We thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue online at VOA Asia Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for much more on all of these stories and developing news as it happens. We also thank those who bring the program to you each day, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead. Be safe. Be well.